This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram? Skidamarinky-dinky-dink?
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo?
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. Back inside the mothership, of course, alongside with me, as always, my PIC, the man who's going to follow in Diamond Dallas' page footsteps with DDP Yoga. He's starting Wiffle Ball in the Book of Wisdom, the highest calorie-burning workout there is. Reading Bible passages, playing Wiffle Ball games. It's going to be the newest, the hottest fad this summer.
It'd be fantastic, actually. A little swing, Book of Genesis, swing, Book of, whatever. JR, good evening. Good evening, Place B Nation. Welcome to episode 446 of The Gold Standard. It was a nice weekend. It was good to see you. First time in the new year of 2017. Mm-hmm. The whole crew was there. We had some boneheads. Greeny had his first taste of the great boneheads. Quite delicious. Looks like JR, usually was... full-blown boneless, but it seems like the bone-in is starting to take over a little more territory on the man cave table.
Well, if you get D'Amato involved, the bone-in is the preference, so that's right. The way we had to go. But no, it was delicious always. I thought we had a good menagerie of flavors. Everyone mm-hmm. had their fill, and I was yep. actually looking at that bowl of candy, Halloween candy I put out that's been sitting on my shelf for however many months.
Yes, yes.
And those vultures just destroyed the bowl, so it's good, because I've been trying to get rid of it, and it's just been sitting here. but it's gone. But it was a rough day today, Scott. I'm telling you, because yesterday, after you headed out and the Greeny and D'Amato babysitting service hung around a little bit longer, took care of the kids for us while my wife and I got a lot of shit done in the yard. But at this time of year, when you're working out in the yard, and the next day I'm always hurting from the pine and the grass, so I had a blaring headache all day long, allergy related. So allergies suck. But what are you gonna do? But here I am, gutting it out. So hopefully you can carry me.
No, we'll be fine. Because this evening, JR, content-wise of the show, a little shorter than normal. We are not opening. First off, I want to say, though, that JR, our first 12 months of content in the new Vintage Vault reboot has been tremendous as we concluded 1985.
It's in the books.
In the books. And I want to thank, of course, Pete. I want to thank, of course, our new member of the triad, Mr. Kelly Nelson. And Parv joined us in the middle of the year. And. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some different – Ryan Everett did a show earlier in the year.
Yep.
So this coming 1986, some different voices will pop in. Well, not different. Different since the refresh, but not guys that you would not recognize. But it's going to be a great 1986. So we're going to start that this evening. We're not in our offices tonight, JR. We will not have our first MSG house show for the year. So about almost 3 weeks from where we are now on the calendar.
Yes.
On the –
Unfortunately, it's next week on here. But you know.
Yes. So yeah, but so we'll be at the Garden next Monday when we record again. But tonight we open the year with the first of what will actually be, I think it's three or four, very good Saturday night's main events for 1986. Mm-hmm. And tonight we are going to go to January 4th. Well, it was aired January 4th. Let's see when it was taped. I believe it was taped on December. I think it was 29th or 28th. I have to double check that. But it is. It was aired on January 4th, the first Saturday of 1986. It was not live, but from the Sun Dome in Tampa, Florida. So we've kind of really left the Northeast Enclave, JR.
Yes.
And have headed to a different part of the country. Another themed show, fun in the sun, pool, and et cetera.
It was December 19th it was filmed.
All right, so December 19th, shot and aired on January 4th on, of course, NBC.
Apparently, it was only the second ever DoDF show to be held in Tampa. The first one was on August 18th, 85, a 9,365 sellout. So
interesting.
I wonder why they never ran Tampa. I don't know if it was just a arena thing or just a area thing that they just hadn't moved down into that Tampa area, but kind of funny.
It is really interesting. Again, I mean, obviously, territory mattered nothing to Vince. Obviously, Florida, kind of part of the whole Crockett situation. Obviously,
right. He's been running Florida, I'm sure. So
yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter that Crockett's been there. Yeah, and obviously the Florida territory, you know, like the Grahams, even though he had died, I think, the year before, they were still running shows. So, interesting.
Son was still riding around in that boat.
Yes, running around that boat with those bad 24/7 bits. Sitting there on like a random dock, like he was walking around. All right, we could shoot here. You don't know if he owns anything. Or, so again, January 4th, 1986. Your announcers are Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and for most of the show, of course, Jesse the Body Ventura. Although he doesn't start the show, we'll get to that in a minute. Now, of course, this was taped live. JR, not one, not two, three shows going on January 4th. We don't have full cards. Courtesy of the history of WWE.com, Mr. Cawthon does not have the full cards, but he does have the dates and the places. So they were at...
I'm going to send him a nasty message right now.
Exactly. The MGM Grand Hotel Goldwyn Ballroom in Reno, Nevada. Savage was there. Randy Savage was there. The Tingley Coliseum in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I don't know if that was the pit where New Mexico State plays, but Andre was there. And then finally, the Civic Center in Amarillo, Texas. Who do you think was there?
Let me guess. Of course.
Exactly. A guy we're going to see in a little bit.
I'm guessing that Reno and Albuquerque was probably a day-night split kind of thing. I mean, those are pretty close together, so.
Yeah, probably. Oh, I'm sorry. That was the next day.
No, they were. Oh yeah, you're right. Amarillo was the next
one day over. My bad. It was the Five Season Center in Cedar. I'm sorry, I was one line too low. The Five Season Center in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. That's where they were on the third show, and Jesse was there, but Funk was there the next night in Amarillo. So
yeah, I wonder if Reno and Albuquerque. I wonder if they flew guys down or if it was two separate crews. That's interesting to me if those are because they're close, but I mean they're not like super close. So it's like everyone could just drive down there. But it's a quick flight, so I don't know if it was worth flying guys down or if it was actually three separate cards that day.
Yeah. Now, the next day, Savage's crew that was in Reno, they flew all the way to Ohio, to Columbus, Ohio, and they wrestled at the Ohio Center, so they had a long flight. And then the other show that night was at the arena in Baltimore, so they traveled the next day. They weren't exactly close to where they were the day of the show. So, okay, one of the greatest opening segments, pre-credit segments in Saturday Night's Main Event history, JR, occurred right before this show, right before the credits. Utterly hilarious. Tell us about it.
Well, we get some notes first. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, we got notes. Yeah, those guy and his fucking notes. All right.
All over the place.
Not Mr. Jarvis, that other guy. What do we got?
WWF champion Hulk Hogan, 712 days into his regain. Tito Santana, 182 days into his reign. The Dream Team, 135 days as tag champs, and Moolah, 40 days into her reign as women's champion. On January 1st, the DoDF and Jim Crockett Promotions both held house show events in St. Louis, Missouri. DoDF headlined with Hulk Hogan taking on Terry Funk, and Crockett Promotions headlined with Ric Flair battling Bruiser Brody to a double DQ. We had four dark matches on this evening. King Kong Bundy knocked off Rick Hunter. Dan Spivey beat Rene Goulet. Scott McGee beat Terry Gibbs. And the Dream Team beat the Killer Bees. So there you go. Now we can start the show proper, Scott. So yes, the first Iron Man event of 1986. The theme this time is Fun in the Sun. And we're in Florida. Our skits take place at a water park, which is pretty cool. Get a series of promos to kick things off, including Hulk Hogan and Mean Gene drinking protein shakes. Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura getting massages by bikini babes, and they watch the hillbillies float around on the lazy river. And then Vince and Jesse open the show with Jesse bragging about being the first announcer ever to call and wrestle a show on the same night on the same show. Jesse then brings Bobby Heenan to cover for him while he's away from this opening match. But what are your thoughts of the bathing hillbillies in the friggin' lazy river? Like, I love how he's using binoculars, Piper. How big is this, you know, like, what is the directionality of this water park that it's big enough you need binoculars, but that means the line of sight is clear enough that he can actually see these hillbillies in the pool? That made me laugh. And then just seeing those slobs, you know, sloving around. I'm sure, as far as they didn't have, like, a bar of soap with them, taking their monthly bath in the water park there.
Well, it's funny you say that because that's what because Piper says to – obviously, it's the greatest moment ever, and it just gets better for these two because Jesse's sitting there getting massaged by, I don't know, 12 women. And he goes, Piper's sitting there, and what's the matter, Hot Rod? I got to sit here and watch these hillbillies take their yearly bath. It's one of the greatest lines ever. So awesome. But
as you're going to water park and seeing those dipshits out in the lazy river floating around –
you start seeing like rings around them. Yep. The water starts turning green. Like the algae Elmer. Stuff starts to kick in.
I can't believe that inner tube was able to hold him up.
That's probably a fucking tire on a truck. Oh, my God. But it was great. Oh, such a tremendous open. And more to come from those two. But it was a great open. I thought it was, you know, we had a nice pre-credit sequence. And after the two shows in 85 that were kind of themed, but not really. I mean, you had three of them. You had the one, the Mother's Day one, and then the one in, and then you had the Big Fat Slappy Pig. So you had a couple of, I guess they were both themed. But the next one after this will not be. They kind of go back and forth with themes after this. But it was good. It was made the show kind of different. It made people that, like us, sitting in, you know, this part of the country was probably like 11 degrees that night. So it's probably cool to have nice warm settings. So Gorilla and Bobby are in the booth, JR, for this first match, which is?
It is Roddy Piper, Bob Orton, and Jesse Ventura taking on the hillbilly, what a girl called? The hillbilly, not brigade. What the fuck did they call them? God damn it. Hillbilly Jim, Cousin Luke, and Uncle Elmer. And, of course, this is all set up back at the second Saturday Night's Main Event, the wedding of Uncle Elmer, when Piper and Jesse Ventura both interrupted and mocked the wedding. And then, of course, the next one, the Halloween episode, too, we had a little bit of fireworks with the Piper's Pit where they shoved the hillbillies down. And in between these shows, Cousin Junior, like we mentioned on our MSG review, was replaced by Cousin Luke. Somehow a downgrade. I don't know how. But they managed to find the one guy worse than Cousin Junior to take Cousin Luke's spot. What do you call him? The hillbilly not representation.
It wasn't an army. It wasn't a brigade. Oh, hang God.
On, pull it up right here. I have it right here.
The hillbilly, it was something funny.
I gotta find it because it's gonna hillbilly contingency. That's what it was. The hillbilly contingency, and that's who is involved here tonight. And so we actually go to the aisle where Gene Okerlund is chatting with Piper, Jesse, and Orton. And Piper makes fun of the hillbillies and brings up their showdown from the last Saturday Night's Main Event. And then Gene talks to the hillbillies as well. Jim says they'll behave like pro athletes tonight, and their family honor is on the line. They'll do whatever it takes to win. Vince says the hillbillies are here to avenge the action that went down at the wedding, and we have a great presence on that heel team. Cousin Luke replacing Junior, subtraction by subtraction. Bobby says they shouldn't be allowed to wrestle in dirty Levi's. They should have to wear shoes. Jesse and Elmer open things up, and Jesse goes to the eyes and clubs away. Elmer fends off Jesse and clobbers him with right hands to a pop, and then hoists him in a choke and drops him to the mat. Jim tags in and grabs a side headlock, but Jesse catches him with a shot and tags in Piper. Jim tags in Luke, who accepts Piper's handshake and kicks him in the gut. Piper comes back with a flurry and tags in Orton, leading to a double clothesline. Piper tags back in, lands some strikes as Vince notes that Orton's forearm injury is the slowest healing injury in wrestling history. The heels keep quick tagging, controlling Luke, using some nice underhanded tactics. Luke finally escapes and tags in Elmer, and he and Piper have a big slugfest that Elmer ends with a bear hug. Piper goes to the eyes, and that leads to a wild brawl between all six men. The heels bail and regroup, and after a break, the heels all charge the ring, leading to another brawl. Things simmer down from there with Jim working over Piper, who eventually slaps Jim across the face. Jim works the arm but gets pulled into the wrong corner, worked over by all three men. Jim punches free and tags in Luke, who cleans house, but Piper grabs him in the sleeper. Things break down and everyone comes in the ring, which allows Orton to clobber Luke with the cast. Piper puts the sleeper back on for the win. Actually, this is pretty fun. The crowd is rocking. Everyone played to their strengths. There was never an extended heat segment or any type of rest hold, as shocking, which shocked me. It was all action. They hit Elmer well, too. He didn't really get much action in the ring. I thought this was a good payoff to everything that has happened over the past two Saturday Night's Main Events. I thought it was smart with the heels cheating. You could have that scrub Luke eat the pin. It doesn't really hurt anyone. I went 2 stars, which surprised me, Scott, when I watched this. But I got into it. It was a fun match. It was a fun outing. I thought all the guys worked hard, and they really made sure they played up to their strengths.
I don't know where the hell 2 stars came from. You really must be on some allergy medications this evening, because I never thought you'd give anything with Hillbillies 2 stars. I gave it 1.5 stars. It was still good. Served its purpose. That heel team is just so great. They carry these guys because Piper and Orton's just a good standard, solid in-ring worker. And, Jesse and Piper are just Hall of Famers when it comes to just, you know, yucking it up, and it was well done in that aspect. It was a good TV match. I knew in ring wise, you weren't expecting much out of anybody. I thought Gorilla and Jess, Vince and Bobby were great, and I liked that Bobby kept calling out Vince for being biased, and Gorilla just, you know, I keep saying Gorilla, Vince just utterly, we're so used to Gorilla, Vince just utterly ignored it. Even though he was pretty much favoring the baby faces, which he does every week or every show. So, gave it 1.5 stars, solid enough. I'm glad the Hillbillies lost. They should have, because nobody cares. And the heels were awesome. Got to keep Piper strong, because he's got obviously something big coming up, in the next couple months. And Orton's Orton, and Jesse was just there to fill out the awesome roster of Hillbilly Hatred. Worked out very well.
Yeah, it's been cool seeing him in this little run. And he's been having, a couple shots at MSG, the match here, but I know he was not even great in his prime years, but he's been rough to watch in the ring. I mean, stuff like this, makes him look not as bad, because the Hillbillies is just a straight brawl anyway. I mean, that match with Barrio was rough. Yes. I'm looking forward to Jesse just getting back in the booth and out of the ring. I mean, I don't need to see him wrestle at this point. It's not really adding much enjoyment to anything. I prefer him just on commentary, where he's much, much stronger at this point.
Yeah, I mean, just wrestling these throwaway matches really just makes the commentary better when he comes back to the table later in the show. Otherwise, it's just not worth it. It's not worth having him in the ring, particularly if it's going to cause health problems, which is the reason he retired in the first place. So there we go. Now, next up, JR, do we go back to the pool, or do we go right to the next match?
Well, Jesse comes back, and he thanks Bobby for filling in. He goes right there. And then we go back to the water park, where we're setting up a water slide competition between the Junkyard Dog and Jimmy Hart. Gene says Hart wants revenge for the branding that happened on the last Saturday Night's Main Event. JYD wins the water slide competition. Jesse says it was an unfair start. Jesse then talks to Terry Funk, who says after he beats Hogan, all the national press will take his picture. So he wants to have a great tan poolside for the Sports Illustrated cover that's sure to come after he wins the match tonight, which is
our second match of the evening and our only title match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation Championship on the line, JR, it's a rematch, actually, but what do we got?
It is Hulk Hogan defending his title versus Terry Funk. And before that, we have Gorilla Monsoon narrating through clips of a match between Hogan and Funk in Denver that ended when Funk bashed Hogan with a branding iron, giving Funk a count-out win. Funk then branded Hogan after the match. Gene talks to Hogan in the aisle. Hogan talks about what happened in Denver, says he has a special surprise tonight, as JYD will be in his corner to ensure no nonsense this time around from Jimmy Hart. JYD will let Hogan do his thing and just keep an eye on Hart at ringside. So, set the stage. Yep. Funk's in the ring. When we come back, Hogan marches out in his powder blue tights, accompanied by the JYD. Vince says this is Hogan's biggest match since WrestleMania. So I thought it was cool. It really added some gravitas to this match, really added the importance to things, saying, you know, Vince sitting here saying, look, Hogan's had a lot of matches this year, but none bigger since the big one at MSG until now. So I thought that really helped add to the importance of everything. JYD grabs Hart and sits him in a chair as we get underway. Hogan wins a tie-up and levels Funk with a clothesline in the corner, knocking him to the floor. Funk returns and lands a couple of chops, but Hogan ducks a charge and clotheslines him over the top to the floor. Hart tries to come over to help, but JYD chases him back to his seat as Jesse bitches about it. Funk comes back in and drops down on a crisscross, but Hogan keeps running and stepping on him before eventually knocking him to the floor and into the timekeeper's table, where he tumbles over a bunch of chairs. Funk regroups and gives it another go, this time driving Hogan into the corner and punching away, but Hogan turns the tables and unloads, taking Funk over with a back suplex for a two count. Funk finally finds some daylight with a blow mule kick and starts to work over the champ with boots. Funk heads up top, but Hulk shakes the ropes and he falls and crotches himself. Hogan drills him with an atomic drop and a headbutt before smashing him with a clothesline and an elbow drop. Hogan grabs a side headlock, but when Funk shoots him into the ropes, Hart hooks his foot. Hogan comes after him, leading to JYD chasing Hart into the ring. With the referee tied up, Funk chokes Hogan out with his wrist tape and then follows with a nice pile driver for a close near fall, and Jesse bitches about the slow count on that one. Funk punches away as the crowd and JYD works to rally Hogan, who hulks up and clubs Funk with right hands at a back elbow. Hogan follows with a big boot that knocks Funk to the floor. Hart hops on the apron with the branding iron and cracks Hogan in the ribs with it during a suplex, allowing Funk to fall on top for a really close near fall, but Hogan gets his foot on the ropes. JYD comes over and levels Hart as Hogan recovers and cracks Funk with a running clothesline for the win. The Axe Bomber, as some may say. Really good TV title match here with some nice drama. Lots of hot brawling. I liked having JYD outside. It added some nice excitement. Both guys kept chugging and never slowed down. The near fall and the branding iron shot was really well executed and a good tease. I mean, you know, we've talked about before the teases, stuff with Piper at the Classic and other times. And this really felt like one, and I think you even mentioned with Savage last month, this felt like one to me that was completely believable. Vince hyping the match up as Hogan's biggest. It's on, you know, primetime television. Funk has been built up as a really, tough heel. And it's believable that he may have cheated to win. He already won one match by count out. You know, WrestleMania is coming up or another Saturday's main event. So, you know, I'm not saying it was likely, but that near fall was well done enough that you kind of, for a split second, thought this could be it and Funk could be winning the title. But it was a really fun match and a really nice showing for Funk, who's been working his ass off here in his WWF run. I went 3 stars on this, Scott. What say you?
I also went 3 stars. It was a lot of fun, and I liked, first of all, I always like we get it till for at least another maybe 4 or 5 months when Hogan kind of rotates the alternating AWA combos. He hasn't worn blue in a while, so I like when he wears the blue. It's a good combo. Hogan had been facing kind of until he fought Savage in December, between when he won the title back in January 84 and now, he was kind of facing his kind of standard WWF heels, Sheik and that kind of stuff, Stud, Valentine, Morocco, like typical WWF heels. But these last two TV matches we've seen, our match on December 30th against Savage and here against Funk, two guys that kind of made him uncomfortable because they're so unpredictable, more than Johnny Rods. And it kind of amped up the unpredictability of the matches themselves, which kind of feeds into what you were saying about the possibility that Funk could win this match and win the world title. Because Funk, I think, is a credible, well, he obviously is, former NWA world champion, a credible guy that could be champion. So even more so than Savage, because, you know, even though Savage is great, even in 85, from a global resume perspective, you didn't really know. Savage really didn't have anything on his plate except, you know, the regional belts in Memphis. But other than that, I mean, Savage was just a newcomer to the scene. Kind of everybody knew who Terry Funk was. And you definitely could think that he could swipe a win and take the world title, particularly now. Obviously, we knew there was – I'm pretty sure we all knew there was going to be a WrestleMania 2. So you never know. And particularly on a televised show, in the new year.
For me, it was mainly just on that near fall. I mean, that's the only time I really bought it. But they had built him up well enough that if they had done it, it was believable. But for that moment, the way it all built and him popping him with the branding iron and covering and Hogan waiting and waiting to that last second, like I just thought it was just for that moment, you're thinking, oh, God, they're going to do it, you know? Like, I don't know before the match if I thought, like, Funk was maybe had a chance. I don't watch it live, but maybe.
I mean, we kind of thought so. I remember watching it. I mean, maybe in hindsight, a higher percentage than, say, Savage, that previous, the previous month at the Garden, just again, because of resume. Everybody knew who Terry Funk was. And a guy that, you know, again, former NWA World Champion. So I think the percentage of him upsetting Hogan on national television was definitely higher than Savage winning at the Garden at this moment. So I think that added a little bit of unpredictability to the match, and it was a lot of fun. I thought this is a great use at the moment of JYD because obviously his in-ring work is deteriorated rapidly from Mid-South days. So this is a good thing for him, seconding Hogan to the ring, chasing after Jimmy and all that kind of stuff. And obviously we had the whole water slide thing, which kind of fed into that. So you know, the whole package was very good. Again, I gave it 3 stars. And Hogan retains with the win his world championship in a very good match. And again, I think the believability of Funk winning adds a lot to it.
What do you think of Funk's run so far in ring and some of the feuds he's had? I mean, he's arguably been one of the best heels they've had. And it's, you know, because if you're not up on like all of this stuff, you would have thought he had just a couple of matches, you know, like a JYD match, the Hogan match. WrestleMania 2, he's out. But he's really worked hard on these house shows. I mean, even that match I didn't like, the one Mr. Wrestling 2, like, I still got the value in it.
Right.
I think he's kind of been a quiet MVP for the back end of 85 into 86 so far. I think he's – this run to me, when you hear about Terry Funk, I feel like doesn't really get the appreciation it should for how good it's been.
Yeah, because it makes perfect sense knowing who Funk's first two big feuds are since getting here. The two top baby, the top baby face, obviously, in Hogan. And then two of the top three, or one of the next couple, you can argue, obviously, Tito and that kind of thing. But right now, I mean, he's the top, one of the top heels in the company. And the fact that he was handed two of the top three baby faces to start is indicative of that. So I thought it, and all the matches have been fun to watch, you know. The unpredictability of Funk as a brawler and as just somebody you don't know what to expect out of him. I mean, he's obviously a pretty good wrestler. You know, the brawling aspect of it wasn't needed in the 70s during that time when everything was so map-based. But he did adapt to the WWF style very easily. And, you know, fit in well with what Vince was looking for in a good crazed heel. Watching some of the Memphis discs we have and seeing him feud with Lawler in 81, it was something you probably weren't totally used to. So kudos to Terry Funk for kind of reinventing himself into this good television heel that wasn't really, you know, he was pretty basic like his brother was in the 70s. But as television has become such a big national television becomes such a big thing, he kind of adapted himself into a crazier kind of TV heel that could work facing great baby faces like Hogan and like JYD. That can add a lot of entertainment value, which is what Vince was looking for.
And I think they used him really well too. Like they didn't really fuck around, like you said. I mean, they brought him in and they took advantage of his name and who he was and his style, and they threw him right in there with JYD in a 1B or 1C feud, and then they they push him right into this big feud with Hogan. I mean, he was calling Hogan out almost immediately, and they built to it, and they have a little feud here as the new year turns. So they've used Funk really, really well, which I think was neat that they didn't bother wasting or fucking around with him. They got right to business with Funk.
Yes. Yep. So great match. I give it 3 stars, and Hulk Hogan does retain his World Wrestling Federation Championship. Back to the pool, JR, and one of the better great heel segments. Once again, the heels are on their game on this night. Mean Gene's at the pool, and who's he talking to?
Well, actually, before that, Gene is talking to Hogan in the ring.
Oh, that's right. He does come out.
Hogan says he hasn't had enough yet. He wants more of Terry Funk. JYD joins in, and Gene compliments him on his work here tonight. Gene then catches up with George Steele and Lou Albano at the water park. Steele's playing with a rubber ducky in the wading pool, and Gene asks if Steele will be rusty or be at 100%, and Albano says he will be ready. Jesse then talks to Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth up on a high on a little cliff, and Liz frets as Savage says he's the macho man and Steele's just an animal. Jesse reveals that Liz can't swim, and trying to teach her like the good boyfriend that he is, Savage grabs her and throws her off the platform and into a giant pool far below, and she's freaking out in the water as Savage and Jesse just sit there and laugh. It was, you know, it, probably something that wouldn't fly tonight. I think Twitter would probably explode, or tonight, these days, Twitter would probably explode if that happened. But at the time, I guess it was a joke. Savage throwing his girlfriend, who can't swim, off a cliff into a pool. I mean, it was a pretty good drop too. And Jesse's just yucking it up with them. Of course, they're best buds. So there you go.
Sounded like a laugh that I heard Saturday night. Yeah, it was hilarious. And what? How did this water park allow all these like Cro-Magnon freak shows in the pool? Right. George Steele and the fucking hillbillies, and but they must have had to really shock. Well, that's true. They should have shocked the pool when the show was over and cleaned all the muck that's, you know, the film
I love
on top
the music.
Of the water.
I love the music that plays over those things. I don't know if it's a network dub or if it's the actual song that was playing. It's always, and then it's like stuck in my head for weeks. A few times we watched this, like it's just a very upbeat synth song. I don't know. I've always enjoyed it. Again, I don't know if it's a network dub in or if it's actually the song they used at the time, but it's a funky little beat. I really makes the scenes pop a little bit.
Mm, I agree. I enjoyed it as well. There's a terrible song we're going to listen to later as we're talking about music on the show, but, time for our third match, JR, and, it'll be the first time we see these two. And unfortunately by many, many stretches, not the last time we see these two.
Sadly, no. And that is Randy Savage battling George, the Animal Steel. Jesse yucks it up. Savage and Liz head to the ring for our next bout. Savage starts jawing at some fans, and Steele comes over and talks to Liz and pets her as Jesse gets disgusted. He goes, Lou Albano's the manager of the year. Why doesn't he push that moron back to where he belongs?
Yes.
that was funny.
Very good.
Yeah. Savage sees what's going on. He comes in and scolds Liz and threatens to belt her. A very young Dean Malenko is a referee, Scott. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't.
We get some stalling and histrionics to open things up. Savage stalks around the floor and hops on the apron. Steele rams into him and knocks him outside. Steele comes out and walks toward Liz and then hustles away when Savage threatens him. Savage catches Steele with a punch in the ring and things spill outside again with the two trading blows. Savage takes off and uses Liz as a shield, leading to Steele falling back into a trance. Back inside, Steele slams Savage and eats open the turnbuckle pad. Savage comes up from behind and but Steele smacks him to the floor. Steele gets distracted by Liz again, allowing Savage to nail him off the top with an axe handle for the win. Savage carries Liz out as Steele and Albano sort out what happened in the ring. I mean, all pathos here. No action really at all, but the crowd was into it. Savage's act is great right now. Just 100% engrossed into every little detail, whether it's jawing with the fans, threatening Liz, sneaking around and attacking his opponents, dominating his opponents, flying around the ring, flying on the floor. He is so locked into every aspect of what he's doing out there. It's amazing to watch. And he's been that way since day one. I mean, he came in ready-made, and he hasn't dipped at all. I think Steele feels dated and played out, but I guess the Liz thing kind of gives him a little bit of a boost. I went half star just for the effort put in from Savage, but otherwise this was really, really nothing.
No, I gave it a half star as well. Completely carried by Savage's histrionics. I'm done with George Steele. I'm fucking done with Albano. I'm done with just that whole bunch. I'm finished with. They did a montage going back to the whole "Oh no, Brown Cow," which seems really dated because it was on TNT what like 9 months before, so it already seems old and vintage. But not much here to go on, and I think this is a complete waste of Savage's talents and abilities. Half star for him, you know, negative 5 stars for George Steele. I understand that, and we talked about this, you know, a few times during the last like 6 months of 85, that maybe, you know, Vince was trying to make George Animal Steel kind of like a, you know, like a baby face kind of cuddly monster kind of thing for the young fans, but it's still, he's just, it's not worth it. It really isn't.
He should have been. I mean, if you want him to do that, just keep him on house shows and let him, you know, let him work the undercards or whatever. And I know he wanted to sell, eventually he sells the mind dolls or whatever else, but he just, I don't even if you want him on bigger shows, just have him down below. Like, why does he need to be wrestling fucking Randy Savage? And, I mean, I guess they had this idea, which on the surface, on paper, is not a bad idea to have, like, the Neanderthal, you know, good-intentioned dope monster fall in love. Beauty and the Beast kind of thing, only he's not evil. And he's not a prince hidden in the beast form. But you know what I'm saying.
Exactly.
But I think they were trying to do something like that, like where this you know, mental deficient is in love with this beautiful woman. Reminds me of a situation at Picasso's years ago. But, you know, he's in love with his
I can easily see George Steele being thrown out of a bar.
In love with this beautiful woman. And, you know, and she's got this asshole boyfriend that she's not going to leave, but she feels bad. You know, so I don't know. It's just the story's okay. It's just that Steele is just so, like, imagine if they had, like, 88 Rick Steiner in this spot. You know, like that would have been awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
But the way it is, it's just Steele is so, he just can't do anything. And the matches are so awful. And I know that's not really the point per se, but it's just, I don't know. It hurts the whole thing. And it, to me, it's just a derailing of Savage into this feud that just will go on forever here in 86.
That's for sure.
I just think it I don't want to say it stunts him because Savage is so awesome. It doesn't fully matter, but he should have been doing way more stuff than this, dealing with this Jamoke.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Waste of Savage's talents. And we give him it a half star because I wouldn't call it, anything with Savage is not a dud. So we give him the half star. Next, JR, we have, I believe we have, kind of a little video package action.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we go back to the pool, right? Because just to recap, earlier in the show, Hulk Hogan was making one of his, you know, jacked up protein shakes, which I'm sure Dr. Zahorian probably helped make for him. And But we go back to that same table, and Mean Gene's talking to Hogan again.
Yeah, they do. And then they tee up. This very special year in review, 1985 WWF music video showcasing all the highlights and stars of the promotion. And it's very Hogan-centric for most of it, of course. But I guess in some ways, I mean, he is, you know, the ace, the lead dog, all the other dogs chasing behind. But, you know, I guess it's fitting in some ways. It was his year. What did you think of this music video?
The highlights were fine. The song was fucking atrocious. I mean, it seemed like something like a throwaway cut that was dumped off of Rocky III or, you know, fucking Karate Kid Part II or something. It was a terrible song.
I'm wondering if it's
I don't know what the hell it was.
It's going to be a dub, right? It has to be a dub because they were pretty good at using actual music at this point. Like, they were using real songs for Saturday's Main Event and pay-per-view. You know, like, they weren't a... You know, they weren't avoiding, like, actual real music. I got to think this was a real song.
Well, if it was, then they have terrible taste. Because
yeah, I got to think that it's dubbed in some cheap production music that cost dirt. You know, that was free domain music or whatever.
Yeah, because it's awful. But they do highlight 1985 about, it's what, probably like a 4-minute clip and maybe 3 minutes and 20 seconds of it's Hogan. They do some stuff. They showed, like, the Piper Orndorff feud kicking in and some other tag stuff and some Tito, and so they'd show some other people, JYD, but obviously most of it is clearly
there's a lot of real music in this. I mean, this is all dubbed. So the song in that music video is Billy Ocean's when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Oh, and the going get, that's actually a good song too.
Yeah, so that was a real song. And then also that song is dubbed in the one at the water park. They used all different songs. They used Walking on Sunshine from one of them. He says a couple more, Take on Me. I mean, there's all like different real songs for the,
a little, aha,
they use Don't You Forget About Me for stuff for Steel. So they used a lot of real songs, which I figured. So yeah, a lot of this is all dubbed in on the network.
Yeah. Cause I mean, the song is fucking abysmal. All right. So why don't we take a break? Three matches in and some other stuff, JR. Once again, a fun Saturday's Main Event so far.
Yeah, this one's been really good. I'd say to this point, I mean, if you discount, you know, kind of set aside the Halloween shenanigans, which are just fun in a camp way, I'd say this is top to bottom so far been the best half of a Saturday's Main Event. We'll see if it continues, but I really enjoy. I always forget how good, you know, how enjoyable this one is, so we'll see if it keeps up.
Yeah, no, I agree. The stuff at the pool is good. Jesse and Piper are just killing everything that they touch. And the matches have been pretty solid. So two matches to go among some other stuff. First, let's take a break, and then we'll be back. Because?
Here he goes.
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuestas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Nation, we are back talking the January 4th, 1986 Saturday Night's Main Event, the fourth one in the series. Hope you're enjoying yourselves. I know Scott and I are. And of course, Scott, there's one thing we do well, and we did it this past weekend, and that's party all the time. They even call you the King of White Sox Style. And you are here to take us to your hidden, deep, dark pop culture corner.
Say that deep and dark. Not the whole deal is a White Sox, whatever. All right. So, obviously, JR's favorite song, still number one, because, as you know, we are only 1 week past from the previous show. which was the December 30th, 1985, which was only a week ago. So the countdown has not changed. Number one is still JR. Will not leave your mind ever and ever and ever. Say You, Say Me from your favorite movie ever, White Knights. So never leaving you.
White Knights. The top movie of 1985.
White Knights, White Sox. Never leave you. So, and as mentioned, number two, our man Eddie Murphy. My girl wants to party all the time. This top 10 is actually not changing much from last week. Number three, moving up one, That's What Friends Are For, Dion and Friends. Number four, down from three, so these two flip-flopped, Alive and Kicking by Simple Minds. Number five, did not move, Climax, I Miss You. Number six, did not move, Small Town by John Mellencamp. This really is the same thing. Number seven, moving up two, was Tonight She Comes by The Cars. Moving down one to eight was Broken Wings by Mr. Mister. Moving up two spots into the top 10 at number nine, Talk to Me by Stevie Nicks, another one of her great solo efforts. And at number 10 in the White Knights, White Sox sandwich, Separate Lives by Phil Collins and Marilyn Martin. So there you go. As you can tell, the top 10 did not really change that much. But our next,
White Sox.
Probably, unless he's in a suit, then it's probably Argyle or some expensive pair of silk socks or something.
Allen wears nice socks.
Allen wears nice socks?
Yeah, he sounds like he wears nice socks.
Allen, I think, wears a lot of nice socks. Yes, he does. So there's your top 10. No real, actually, it barely changed from last week. So hopefully in 3 weeks when we have our next pop culture report, the countdown will change quite a bit. All right, JR. The first movie week of 1986. So before we do that, why don't we take a look at the top 10 box office, because we did the whole year, the box office winners of 1985. At the theaters, and then we will go to the first weekend of the year. So 1985, of course, we had a lot of great movies that came out that year. Some of them we documented, some we didn't because they came out on weekends that we weren't doing shows. You remember a lot of the movies, JR, that came out in what do you think were some of the biggest movies of 1985. What do you think was the top 10? See if you can get the top 10.
Oh, God. White Knight.
No. No. Not White
Knight. I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember. Because, I mean, there's ones that we didn't talk about. So, I don't know. Back to the Future. Is that this
Back year? To the Future was number one.
Okay. There you go. I got that. That's all I'm doing. That's okay. All I need. Because there's stuff we didn't talk about. I know we mentioned. Was Goonies? Was that 85? Did we talk about that?
Goonies was in there. Yep. Goonies is in there.
If you give me a hint, I may be able to get them. I mean, there's so many. We haven't talked.
Okay. Let's see. My screen just changed. I still have the 1986 movies up. So we'll do that, and then once I find that one, we can do the 1985s. All right. So, New Year's Day. This is more fun anyway, because you've got some real doozies here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. 11 movies came out New Year's Day.
Jesus Christ.
You'll enjoy some of these, though. All right. One movie made no money. I'm looking forward to you trying to find this. It is called Nanou. N-A-N-O-U. Just type that and see what happens.
Okay. What is it? Say it again.
N-A-N-O-U. Nanou.
Well, it's a village in Burkina Faso as well, so let's see.
Maybe that's where the movie took place.
That's all that comes up.
Okay. It was a movie that came out.
Hang on. There is an entry. Hang on. It's a Franco-British film by Connie Templeman. 1970s, a blonde English student, Nanou, spends just a few months on the continent, touring Switzerland, but prefers France. In the rain, she meets Luc, a handsome worker in a militant extreme left wing, and trains with him for activities outside the law. Gradually moves into a French village and lives out her activist life on the sidelines until England remembers her. Starring Jean-Philippe Icoffe. Daniel Day-Lewis is in this one.
Oh, wow. It must be very early in his career.
Roger Ibanez, cousin of Raul.
I knew you were going to say that. All right, next up, making a whopping $78,000 When there's insert any joke you'd like here whatsoever. Hard Bodies 2.
Is this on Cinemax?
It is, starring Mr.
Candace
Yes.
1986 adult comedy movie sequel. So the 1984 film Hard Bodies. Directed by Mark Griffiths, featuring Brad Sutott, Fabiana Udeno, James Caron, and Alba Francesca.
I thought you were going to say Brad Stutz.
My God. So that's Soft Bodies, too. The plot involves a pair of film crews in Greece and derives humor from the use of profanity and nudity. The movie was released by Cinetel Films and has a runtime of 88 minutes. Leonard Maltin gave it, the film, a bomb rating.
Did you just say Leonard?
Leonard.
Leonard Maltin. All right, so there you go. Okay, next up, this made, let me make sure I have it in the right order, made $140,980. The movie is called Let's Get Harry. Let's go get Harry.
Let's get Harry. Is that like Harry Christmas, like in our Christmas special?
Yes, Harry
1986 Christmas. Action film starring Michael Shuffling, Thomas Wilson, Glenn Frey, your buddy, Rick Rossovich, Gary Busey, Robert Duvall, Mark Harmon.
Rick Rossovich, wow.
Film opens in Colombia, where an American engineer named Harry Burke on hand to oversee the opening of a water pipeline built by his company. Harry becomes embroiled in a kidnapping when a group of rebels arrives to kidnap an American diplomat who is on hand for the pipe's unveiling. There you go.
Okay.
Fidel Abrego is hood number one.
Not even worth having a name. All right, next up, this made $235,262. The movie is called Willie Millie, and it has a slash in between the Willie and the Millie.
Willie Millie?
Willie Millie, with Y, ending in Ys. Willie Millie, both ending in Y.
1986 comedic fantasy film. Film follows the tale character of Millie Niceman, a young tomboy, unhappy with the traditional expectations for her gender, longs to become a boy so she can act however she wants. There you go. Pamela Alden, Eric Gurry, John Glover, Patty Duke, Seth Green. Is that the Seth Green was in this thing?
Yeah. Well, I seriously doubt it. Wouldn't he have been like two?
No, it's him.
Wow. How old was he in that?
He was born in 74, actually.
Oh, so he was 12. Okay. Makes sense. Okay. Next up, this made for $206,952. It is not Tito Santana's autobiography, but it is called Matador.
Okay.
Not L, just Matador.
Just Matador. Let's see. It's actually a Danish film series, TV series, I mean. Let's see, film, okay, Matador. A 1986 film about a student matador, Angel Jimenez, who confesses to murders he did not commit. Themes include sex, death, and religion. Diego Montez is a bullfighter forced into early retirement by a goring. In the early opening scene, he finds sexual gratification viewing videos of violent death. Sounds like a hell of a flick.
Yikes.
Starring Nacho Martinez, Assumpta Serna, and Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas. I wonder how young he was. Okay. Next up, this made, let's see, this made $441,863. It is called Night Mother, and the night has a hyphen on it, like Good Night Mother.
White Night
Mother? Night Mother. Night Mother, and the night has a hyphen, has an apostrophe in front of it.
Oh, we said hyphen. The mouth run off.
I'm sorry.
Let's see. Here is the play, film adaptation. Drama film starring Sissy Spacek and Anne Bancroft, directed by Tom Moore. Jessie's a middle-aged woman living with her widowed mother, Thelma. One night, she calmly tells Thelma that she plans to commit suicide. She makes this revelation all while nonchalantly organizing household items. Resulting in intense conversation between Jessie and Thelma reveals Jessie's decision for her, reasons for her decision, how thoroughly she has planned her own death, with a disturbing yet unavoidable climax. Michael Kentworthy also stars.
Climax. Okay. All right. Next up, this movie made, let's see. Okay. Now we're getting into some millions at least. This made $1.131 million. I think I actually remember this movie. It's called Half Moon Street.
Okay. Let's see. Half Moon Street, the film. A British-American erotic thriller filmed with an American woman working at a British escort service becomes involved in political intrigue surrounding her clients. Dr. Lauren Slaughter is an American woman of considerable intellect, an expert on China who now lives in London working for a think tank. Unhappy with superiors who take credit for her work and dissatisfied by her low wages, Dr. Slaughter moonlights in her flat on Half Moon Street as a paid escort to lonely men. One such, identifying himself as a fake name, turns out to be Lord Bilbick, a trusted House of Lords member with a key role in national defense. Starring Sigourney Weaver and Michael Caine.
Okay, so
Stephen Sutton is the guy who's angrily tweeting.
So she's diplomat by day, hooah by night.
You didn't deliver my whore to my house fast enough. I'm very upset.
Yes. I just tweeted out the order 3 seconds ago. All right, next. This made $1.338 million. It opened. And this is kind of the – this is what you would call the secondary version of Transformers. GoBots, War of the Rock Lords.
I loved GoBots.
I liked GoBots too.
I mean, I was obviously a huge Transformers fan, but GoBots are good. The Guardian GoBots are continuing their work of rebuilding the home planet of Gobotron. When a mysterious ship crashes the planet, Leader One, Turbo, and Scooter investigate and find it to be occupied by a pair of transforming rocks, Solitaire and her valet Nugget. Starring Margot Kidder, Roddy McDowall, Michael Nuri, and Telly Savalas.
Nice. It's a pretty good little... cast there. Of course, Margot Kidder in the throes of the Superman movie series. All right, next, this made this made $2.995 million, an action film called Bullies. B-U-L-L-I-E-S, Bullies.
The peaceful Morris family moves to a small town and buy the town grocery store, only to run into the Cullens, a family that's been bullying the townspeople for years. They begin to torment the Norris. Sounds like the SOBs and the Hearts. Begin to torment the Norrises every chance they get. Matt Norris begins seeing a girl named Becky, whose last name is unfortunately Cullen. In this Romeo and Juliet-esque relationship, Matt and Becky keep their relationship a secret, but when the feuding families find out, harassment is elevated to vicious assault. Starring Jonathan Crombie, Janet Lane Griffin, or Green, I should say, Stephen Hunter, Olivia DeBow, and that's about all you'll know, Brock Simpson. Bernie Colson.
Forbidden Love, kind of like, Pillman and Mahoney. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted them to get married, and they did. All right, and finally, the top movie of the weekend. It made $5.099 million, a thriller suspense film called Out of Bounds. I kind of remember this, I think.
All right, let's see what it's about. Daryl Cage, an Iowa farm boy, whose parents sent him to live in Los Angeles with his brother. At the airport, Daryl's suitcase full of checkered flannel shirts is switched with one containing a drug kingpin's heroin. The gangster boss has Cage's brother and live-in girlfriend murdered, but the police suspect Daryl of the crime. Cage becomes the prime suspect of his brother's murder and must clear his own name. He almost rid himself of the heroin by tracking down the kingpin. Anthony Michael Hall is Daryl Cage, also starring Jenny Wright, Jeff Kober, Glenn Turman, Raymond Berry, Jerry Levine, Meatloaf.
Yes, wow.
Meatloaf. As Meatloaf, Gil, yeah. As Meatloaf, it says. Alan Graff, Linda Shine. There you go. Produced by Richard Tuggle. Directed by Richard Tuggle, I should say.
Yeah.
So Meatloaf played a guy named Gil as Meatloaf. I don't know what the fuck that means. Meatloaf, maybe they knew as Meatloaf was playing another guy on the show.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of unusual. So there you go. There is your
not as good as
move.
Weird Science for Mr. Hall, sadly.
No, not at all. Not at all. So there is your loaded 11 movie opening weekend of 1986.
All bunch of trash.
Oh yeah, pretty much all crap. Curious to see what 1986 has in store for us, JR. All right, let's go on to sports. It is divisional playoff weekend in the National Football League. And two games on Saturday on this day, and then two games tomorrow, January 5th. The early game on Saturday took us to the Orange Bowl in Miami, where the Dolphins, JR, defeated the Cleveland Browns 24-21. Dan Marino threw for 238 yards. Ernest Biner in the loss rushed for 161 yards. We'll see who the Dolphins play in the AFC Championship in a moment. But first, let's go out to Anaheim, to Anaheim Stadium. And the Dallas Cowboys would be playing their last playoff game for 6 years as they lose 20-0 to the Los Angeles Rams as Eric Dickerson set a playoff record by rushing for 248 yards. I do remember watching this game, and the Cowboy defense got utterly shredded. And the Rams, who will they play in the NFC Championship game? Well, let us go to that Sunday, the 5th, at Soldier Field in Chicago. It was the Bears and the Giants from Soldier Field, and it was indeed the Bears beating the Giants 21-0. This was the infamous game, if you remember the old highlight of Sean Landetta trying to punt, and the ball blew off his foot, and he whiffed on it. And it was very cold, of course, that day. And the Bears win 21-0. So the NFC Championship next week will be the Bears and the Rams in Chicago. And finally, out at the Coliseum in Los Angeles, so the city of L.A. and I guess the Anaheim Burbs hosted two playoff games. And the New England Patriots continue their big upset stretch on the road. Of course, they beat J.R. and Greeny's beloved Jets in the wild card game. And then they upset the Los Angeles Raiders 27-20. So the AFC Championship from the Orange Bowl in Miami, the Patriots and the Dolphins. The NFC Championship from Soldier Field, the Bears and the Rams. So we will recap the NFL season on next week's show. All right. In the NBA, by the way, Jared, our building was closed. The Knicks were on the road on this day, and they lost. They got hammered by the Bucks, 119-86.
Yes.
Other games in the NBA that day, anything of note? Let's see. Hawks beat the Bulls. Dallas beat Utah.
Nothing of note.
No, nothing of note.
Forget
really.
Dallas versus Utah in 1986.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see what the high score that day. I guess it would be this guy, P. Short. I don't know who he is. I'm going to click on his name. Purvis Short, graduate of Jackson State, had 37 points in the Spurs 122-116 win over the Warriors. He actually played for Golden State. So that was the NBA. In the NHL, there were seven games. Nothing of note. Whalers lost to Edmonton 4-3. The Islanders at home lost 4-1 to the Blackhawks. Canadiens beat Calgary. Quebec beat Detroit. Flyers lost to the Blues. Kings beat Toronto. And the Caps blew out the Devils. And finally, JR, we not only have a well-known death on this day in pop culture, but an actual well-known, well, not well-known, but a sports birth. Hmm. I'm going to give you a hint. You might get it, actually. On this date, January 4th, 1986, this running back was born. He went to West Virginia. He was drafted by the Texans in 2008. He also played for the Dolphins and the Toronto Argonauts. You are incorrect.
Hang on. Texans played for the Dolphins and the Argonauts. Mm-hmm. Texans.
He was the 89th pick in the third round in 2008.
I don't know.
Steve Slayton.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, was born that day.
okay, and, thanks. It's the hard-hitting information you hear on the Place to Be podcast.
That's right.
Not even Steve Slayton's family remembers when the fuck Steve Slayton's birthday is.
Come on! It's cold. finally, this guy is very well known. He died on this date, January 4th, 1986. One of the most well-known rock bands of the 70s and early 80s. They had a very well – actually, they had a couple of hits. Their most known hit was called The Boys Are Back in Town. The band was Thin Lizzy. Their lead singer, Phil Lynott, died on this day, January 4th, 1986, at the age of he was 36. Very sad. He had incredible drug problems, a lot of heroin, and it ended up shut. He had a massive organ shutdown, his liver, his kidney. It was not good. But he was a great musician, good frontman for the for Thin Lizzy, but his drug demons could not he could not escape them, and he died at the age of 36 on this date, January 4th, 1986. And there is your pop culture report. I expect everyone to watch all 11 of those movies, including Nanu and Matador.
I'm going to petition for Steve Slayton to get the Warrior Award at the Hall of Fame next year. don't know who they are. Okay, so let's get back into the show here. Mean Gene is in the aisle talking to Nikolai Volkoff about the big peace match coming up tonight. Nikolai says this is the first step to end American superiorism due to better wrestling. Iron Sheik shows up and spits on America, and Blassie says tonight proves America is a paper tiger, and that Sheik is here to support his friend. Jesse then heads to the water park to talk to Corporal Kirchner, talks about being able to parachute anywhere thanks to his training, and Jesse says combat tactics won't be allowed in this peace match, only wrestling. Kirchner then demonstrates the proper technique to drop into the water by hand gliding down into it off a zip line. So there you go, more shenanigans as Corporal Kirchner battles Nikolai Volkoff, I should say, in the peace match. What did you think about the peace match gimmick?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was kind of unique because you don't really get to see Nikolai kind of do something like this where, you know, he's got to stick to his actual wrestling ability because he either, you know, is a clubbing, cheating heel or he's in tags with Sheik and he's not in the ring for a full match. So I was kind of looking forward to this and actually pretty good opening for Corporal Kirchner because nobody really knows about who he is much and this is a good showcase for him on national television to give the fans an opportunity to see what he can do. Obviously, they miss the beloved Sergeant Slaughter, who, of course, at this point was off in the AWA. So good chance for the fans to get a good look at Slaughter and gives Nikolai a chance to actually wrestle a match because he never really gets to all the time. So I was looking forward to it. It was exciting.
In early 1986, the U.S. and Soviet Union just completed a successful summit in Geneva, Switzerland, creating better communication between the two superpowers. In that same spirit, Nikolai Volkoff issued a challenge to Corporal Kirchner for signing his main event. In a press release issued before the event, Volkoff was quoted as saying, "In the spirit of the Geneva summit, I am challenging this American warrior to wrestle using only scientific techniques. It is my hope to show the superiority of the Soviet athlete using only peaceful means as opposed to the Star Wars brutality of Corporal Kirchner." So there you go. Nikolai belts out the national anthem as always, getting cut off and getting the crowd worked up. Kirchner makes his entrance, get underway. The two lock up to start as Vince talks about Volkoff's experience edge. Jesse wonders who will remain honest and keep things scientific. Nikolai controls on the mat early, but Kirchner turns him over to an armbar and then into a side headlock. Nikolai powers out, leading to a big test of strength top wrist lock that ends with a clean break. Nikolai rides Kirchner down and rolls him over into a near fall, and we get more lockup and clean breaks as the two keep trading holds and momentum. Nikolai even busts out a cartwheel to avoid Kirchner, but the corporal is able to grab hold of the arm again. Nikolai finally breaks the rules, burying a knee on a clean break, dropping Kirchner across the top rope with a stun gun, and drops a knee for two. Kirchner beats up Sheik and Volkoff after the bell to stand tall. I thought this was a great heel finish here with Nikolai baiting Kirchner the whole match and then catches him napping for the win. The mat stuff was pretty well done, too. I thought Nikolai was impressive working on the mat. I thought this was a fun match. I went for a star, but to me that's like five for these guys. I liked how Nikolai just baited him and baited him and baited him and then outwitted Kirchner to get the win.
Yeah, I gave a half star here. I couldn't see myself giving an extra half star to it. It was fine. It served its purpose, but clearly Kirchner was a little bit over his head and kind of fumbled his way through it a little bit. I mean, Nikolai was pretty good. I like the kind of the takedowns he did, and he did the best he could, but he's an experienced guy. Kirchner, I think, is a little – I think he was a little exposed as a guy who didn't have that much in the way of ability. So I gave it a half star. Again, it's kind of hard to dud anything really that bad unless it's a house show match. And I give Nikolai credit for doing the best he can under the circumstances.
I thought he looked good on the mat. I don't know. I thought he did.
Yeah, I thought he was fine, but Corporal Kirchner clearly does not have the wherewithal yet to really be a major player, and he's obviously no Sergeant Slaughter. So
he's got the look.
He definitely has a look, but he's kind of a mess otherwise, though. Corporal Kirchner or Sergeant Slaughter at that time was not a, you know, Ricky Steamboat or anything like that, but he still knew how to tell a great story. So
he's a great worker. I mean, it's too bad that he wasn't around even to have passed the torch and like done a tag team or something with Kirchner to bring him along. I mean, Kirchner is almost like a guy like Beefcake. Like when we saw him early on, you know, a guy that was very limited in the ring, very green, not a great bumper. And then, you know, you saw working alongside Greg Valentine for half a year, did for him. It's too bad there wasn't a guy that could kind of take Kirchner under his wing, you know, and help bring him up. And I'm kind of surprised they didn't go to the well like they did with Hillbilly and try and pair him up with Hogan a bit. You know, I guess Hogan's had Orndorff as his buddy, but Kircher seemed like a ready-made, you know, the real American thing, and he had a good look. I'm surprised they didn't try and buddy them up a bit here, especially with him fighting Volkov. I mean, Volkov.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if we talked – well, we really didn't talk about it because he was gone by 80 – by beginning of 85. But it was the whole G.I. Joe thing, right? Like he couldn't
– right.
He didn't want to give Vince money, which is weird for Vince because Vince doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would try to fleece somebody out of – maybe he would. Who knows?
I think so. What are you talking
about? Yeah, I guess so.
Do you think him and Hogan could have worked?
Hogan and Corporal Kirshner?
Yeah, it was like his buddy. Like, you know,
yeah,
they
I guess
tried
so.
With Hillbilly.
I think he would have been better than Hillbilly. yeah, I don't see why not. At that point, I would have gone for that. If anything, maybe the next science – well, I guess the next science main event you can't really do because they had something already set up for that. But, yeah, I would have worked a couple house shows. Maybe this house show coming up at the Garden that we'll do next week. Maybe could have done a tag there. Maybe Sheik and Volkov against Hogan and –
or even just
how about Sheik and Volkov against Hogan and Kirshner? Why not?
Yeah,
you know?
I think so. I'm surprised they didn't maybe try it along the way somewhere. But anyway, this match reminds me to remind you to watch The Americans each and every week on FX. Best show on TV.
Yes, I have to dive into that show. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so there you go. So Nikolai Volkov cheats to get the victory. Next up, JR, do they go back to the pool? I think they're done with the pool, right?
No, we go back there. We see Cliff. You are on a roll tonight. We see clips of Morocco surfing at the water park and then
getting mobbed by women.
Gene then talks to Morocco and Fuji and says they have a history of using illegal moves in their matches. Morocco laughs it off and says maybe if he was a mailman, he would be afraid of a dog. Fuji talks about how in his country they cook dogs. That was kind of
fried, boiled. It was gross.
Oh, yeah. Gene chats with Ricky Steamboat and the Junkyard Dog. Steamboat says everything's possible has been done to him across the country, but Morocco still hasn't beaten him in the ring. He says JYD's the best man he could have in his corner tonight, and JYD says they're setting a bad trend for the kids, and he's going to help Ricky Steamboat do something about it. So here you go, doing it for the kids. Jesse says they eat raw dog in Japan as Morocco and Fuji get into the ring. All-four brawl to open the match with Morocco and Fuji dominating and clearing Steamboat out. Morocco works over JYD in the ring as Fuji slams Steamer on the floor. JYD turns the tide with a backdrop and snapmare, but misses a falling headbutt. Fuji tags in and smacks around JYD, but JYD kicks him in the gut and slams him to the mat. Fuji begs off, but JYD disregards that and comes at him. Fuji lands a thrust and tags out, but JYD's all over Morocco and gets a near fall. Steamer lands a shot from the outside. Morocco recovers and makes the tag. Fuji comes in and gets a few strikes before tagging out. Morocco clubs away and drops an elbow, but JYD blocks a pile driver. Morocco tags out, and Fuji blocks the tag with a quick blow and falling headbutt. Morocco heads back in and kicks away JYD, but finally slips up and allows JYD to make the tag. Steamboat comes in hot and nice through both Morocco and Fuji, peppering both and slingshotting Morocco into Fuji. Steamboat heads up top and lands a high cross body for two as Fuji breaks up the pin. Steamer avoids a back suplex from Fuji and tags in the dog, who levels Fuji with a headbutt for the win and big pop. Steamer hammers away in Morocco after the bell and celebrates the win. I thought it was a really good tag match, a solid heat segment, and a hot finish. And I was surprised that they had JYD actually get the pin and not Steamboat. But either way, Morocco stays protected. And I thought it was a fun way to end the show. Red hot face team. And I went 2 stars on this one too, Scott. That was a really good match. That both continued and possibly, you know, if they wanted to end Steamboat Morocco here, they easily could have done it with this match. So I think it's a very versatile match, and I think it got the point across well, and I really enjoyed it.
I gave it 2 stars also. I liked it a lot. 4 good workers. You know, even JYD, who's, you know, he's not as up as the others are.
He shines in these situations where he can, you know, either sell a bit or make the hot tag. He's not in there the whole time, suck and win the whole match, you know?
Right, exactly. And, you know, you got a guy like Steamboat. He doesn't have to do all the work. You know, and I guess, you know, Fuji is kind of, you know, he's worked more than right. He would have thought he did at this point. So it's like we've seen him a lot in the ring in 1985, and we already see him here in 86. But we don't see him, you know, quite a bit, obviously, as the year progresses. And eventually he's pretty much a full time manager. Of course, we see one time he's in the ring a couple years from now on the big stage. But otherwise, his in ring time slowly coming to an end. But I enjoyed it. It worked, served its purpose. Crowd was hot. Steamer's on a roll. He's going to have a good 1986. Morocco, his 86 is not as good as his 85 was, but otherwise, great match and 2 stars. So 5 matches tonight in ring, all fairly solid for TV matches. Everything was good.
Yeah, for 1986 WWF show, this is maybe as close to as good as it could get.
Right.
When you look top to bottom. So, no, I agree with you. I enjoyed it. So, why don't we get to our awards?
The awards.
Let's see here. Our match of the night, I went with, of course, Hulk Hogan and Terry Funk.
Yeah. Yeah. Although this match comes pretty close, this last match. But, definitely Hogan and Funk. It was a lot of fun.
Not close enough. The Cousin Junior Award for the worst match, I went with, sadly, I can't believe, I just wish I didn't have to put his name. I'm going to go George Steele versus Randy Savage. I wish I could just put George Steele, but
yeah.
And I feel bad putting Savage here, but it's, you know, he just, what's he going to do?
No, unfortunately, his opponent dragged him so low that it went below every other match on the show. It's the way that it worked on this evening.
MVP of the night, I went with Hogan. I thought overall he was the best. I mean, I enjoyed a lot of other stuff across the show. I thought Jesse was really good throughout all his work. But I thought Hogan was the best, both in the protein shakes and then in his match with Funk and the post-match promo. He's just the biggest force they have, and he's the best to watch.
Mm. I almost was going to give it to Funk, but I feel like they were equally good. So I'll agree with you and go with Hogan, but Funk, I think, deserves a little honorable mention because he definitely held his end of the bargain in that match and that whole segment.
I know. He was really, really good, but Hogan, to me, just had a little bit more across the board.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I like Hogan in that spot.
All right. Let's go with our Gator Wolf Award for the worst wrestler, and I'm going, of course, with George Steele.
We don't need to go any further.
All right. Our best moment of the night, I went with a JYD pinning Fuji. I thought that was really cool. The crowd went nuts. It was a big mm-hmm. moment, and kind of Fuji finally gets his comeuppance. The dog beats him instead of him eating the dog, so that was good. I thought that was a cool moment. I like that one.
Yes, I agree. It was a good way to end the night and capped off a good night of wrestling in a pretty good match. Better match than I think anybody would have thought it would have been, so even with Steamboat in it. So I agree. Good ending.
All right, and our Junior Mr. Universe Award for the most juiced up guy in the night. I, again, went Hulk Hogan on this one. Not a lot of juice flowing on the show. A lot of the guys...
Yeah.
Different looks. Yeah. I mean, Kirchner's pretty jacked up, but I think Hogan, to me, was clearly the most roided up on this one.
Yeah, and it was mostly by default. I mean, he was kind of his normal-looking self, but there wasn't a lot of jacked-up dudes on this show right. on this night.
I mean, he could win it every time. We kind of varied a bit, but, he's always in the running.
Well, there's some guys that are just big, and there's some guys that are just, you could tell, are just abnormally big. I don't ever consider Hogan abnormally big. He's always a big dude. I mean, like the Tony Atlases and Dynamite, when they're veins are bulging everywhere and that kind of thing, you could tell there's a little, they got a little bit of help. Hogan, we know he did, but it wasn't as glaring.
Now his comes out in his, he's got the HGH gut a little bit.
So he's definitely bloated, more bloated than, and he says it in his book that he enjoyed getting off it and was able to kind of, not be gut, busting out of his gut. But on this night, there was really nobody else in that role. So Hogan definitely has to get it.
All right, and overall, Scott, I actually gave this one of my highest grades, I think, to date, pretty close to anyway. I went with a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm gonna be a little generous. I'll give it 6.5 out of 10. I thought it was a fun show. The between segments in the pool, whether I remembered them or not, who cares? They were all really good, and the matches were solid. Everything was great. It was a good mm-hmm. package, good way to start the year off, nice way to kind of recap 1985. And it was good. It was one of the faster watched. I mean, all Saturday Night's main events, not commercials included, are only over an hour. They're not that long anyway, but...
It's kind of a forgotten one. Like, I always forget about this one hidden here, but it's good. I mean, the skits are all good. The theme is good. It flows well. You get some good matches. There's really no downtime. And even Savage Steel is still pretty quick for what it is. And you get all the story part of it, too. So what did you say you went with?
6.5. Okay. And the reason it's forgotten, JR, is because it's sandwiched between... the big fat sloppy pig, and our next Saturday Night's main event, which will be in a couple months, and obviously is much more memorable for many other reasons. And is so this one's kind of forgotten because it's kind of slides in that slot in the between. So that's why it's forgotten. But it's a good stretch of Saturday Night's main events. The big fat sloppy pig, and then this one, and then the one we're going to get in a couple months in early March. So good stretch for the network television of the World Wrestling Federation.
For sure.
So there you go.
Indeed. So we'll be back next week looking at the January 27th, 1986 house show next Monday. Kelly Nelson back in the house, our third Freebird. He'll be here talking about that show. I also want to bring your attention to a couple of podcasts out there right now on the site, placemanation.com. Our Vantage Point, last week, talked to Sean Mooney. Pretty cool interview and a pretty hot topic right now. Mooney, of course, spotted or confirmed at least to be in Dirty Studios filming a DVD release on Unseen Matches. So Mooney's kind of a hot topic. So if you haven't checked that out, it's a really quick, brisk listen. And Mooney, yep, you know, tells some good stories, has some good laughs. And I recommend that one greatly, as well as, Scott, the premiere episode of Letters from Center Stage.
Ah, yes.
Myself and the chap called Alan, picking up where Letters from Kayfabe kind of left off. Not really, but of course, they had their 20-episode run. Parv went into retirement, and then Alan and I decided to bring back the franchise. But this time around, we are talking WCW from their 1989-ish through 2001 run. We'll be answering your letters, your questions. So if you have any for us, you can send them to our Twitter, at @place2bnation, at @Alan_cheapshot, or lettersfromcenterstage at, I believe, gmail.com is the email address. So check that out. We'll answer your questions each and every week, every Friday morning on place2bnation.com. That show will be out there. It's a real quick listen, just 45 minutes or so.
Yes.
But it's a lot of laughs, a lot of fun, and Alan's a cool dude. So be sure to check that out. Anything this week from you, Scott?
No, quite a week. There will be a piece coming up this week. I wanted to watch tonight's Raw, but I will be doing a piece on placebination.com about Braun Strowman and what you know, what could be done with him over the next, you know, 5 or 6 months on Raw, and what, you know, kind of my thoughts on how they can move him along and what his character could bring and what he could do for the show and what his you know, what the fans could see from him and what WWF will do. So that'll be coming up later this week. I want to say, JR, I listened to Letters from Center Stage on the way to your house Saturday, Greeny and I did, and it was tremendous. I highly recommend it. Him and Alan, you guys were really good. Again, nice quick sprint. Good little Bruno action. It was good. Good to, you guys talked about Bruno and WCW. And it was one of the topics. It was very well done. Highly recommend listening to Letters from Center Stage. I will preview that at the end of the week, probably Thursday, on both the Facebook page and on Twitter, probably looking ahead to a main event mailbag episode, which I haven't done in a while. So, you guys kind of motivated me with Leonard from Center Stage. So probably on Thursday, I'll post on Twitter, some sort of mailbag hashtag, and love to hear your letters and questions, all you listeners out there. And then on our next main event next week, we will read them and talk about them. So, get your questions ready. And when we fire it up at the end of the week, send them to me, and that's what we'll do next week. So looking ahead to that, but great week here on placebination.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
So. Also, do clotheslines and headlines coming this Wednesday night, yes, as well. And be sure, yep, to take part in our daily question of the days. We'll have that on our Facebook and Twitter page. And then every week, Mr. Greenhouse does a roundup, and your answers may be part of that roundup that gets posted every Monday. So keep an eye on all of our social media avenues for your updates and the latest news. Facebook.com/place2bnation, place2bnation on Twitter. So for Mr. Criscolo there, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week. Kelly in the house looking at the January 86 MSG House Show. Until then, enjoy your fun in the sun.
Matador!
Enjoy bathing with the stank-ass hillbillies.
Skim that pool.